Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked off Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 14 lines from the top of Daf Ches. The introduction to today's shiur we had mentioned at the tail end of our previous shiur, but for those who may not have heard that, so just a very brief recap. We are dealing with a machloikis. We started off as a machloikis amoroyim, whether we say tuma hutra betzibur or dechuya betzibur. As far as what those terms mean, well, we spent a lot of time already explaining them in the past. We saw that that issue of Hutra versus Dechuya was a Machlokes Tanoim that we saw back on Daf Zayin. And here, and we should point out that on Daf Zayin, we saw that in the form of a Tanaic source having Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda arguing on that point. They were arguing about the effectiveness of the tzitz, and it came up in that discussion that Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion tuma hutra betzibur, leaving Rabbi Shimon as the one who argues with him. We now continue in the Gemara with a question where the Gemara suggests, should we say that the following source is a machlokes tanoim that parallels the previous machlokes tanoim? After the Gemara raises this inquiry, the Gemara will reject that and suggest that as far as the Tanoim in this source are concerned, they are all of the same opinion on that matter, and what exactly is their issue, what are they arguing about, so that will be featured in several stages as the Gemara unfolds. Those stages will be highlighted with markings. You'll notice a diamond marking that appears a few lines later, essentially taking us till practically the end of this Amud of Gemara. So now the Gemara, 14 lines from the top, beginning of the line, Neimo, Hani Tanoi, Kehani Tanoi. Shall we say that the Machlokes Tanoim that we saw already, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, as to whether we say Tuma Hutra Betzibor, meaning Tuma is totally suspended, Tumas Mace is totally suspended as a concern when it comes to public sacrifices, the opinion that argues, namely the Tuma Dechuya Betzibor, that it's not totally suspended, but if you have no other choice, then we will overrule the rules of Tuma when it comes to a public offering. So shall we say that that Machlokes Tanoim, Kehani Tanoi, will parallel the following Machlokes Tanoim, Desanya? Note, by the way, that this is a long question, because the question is, shall we say that we can parallel the following Machlokes Tanoim? It says, in this Tanaic source, Echod Zeh V'Echod Zeh, whether we're referring to the Kohen who's going to prepare the Pora Aduma, the burning of the Pora Aduma, the red cow whose ashes are used for purification of the those who are defiled to the dead, and the Yom Kohen for Yom Kippur, the Kohen who is separated for Yom Kippur, both of them, Mazin Olav Kol Shiva Mikol Chatois Shehoyu Sham, they are sprinkled with the Chatos. The Chatos is a reference to the Efer Pora Aduma mixed with water, the water ash mixture used for purification. So in the Beis HaMikdash, so they had samples, we'll say, of all the Pora Adumas that had been processed over the years. So that's that's what is meant here in this source, Mikol Chatois, from all the different Pora Adumas that had been slaughtered and burnt over the years. They had samples, And anyway, that is Divrei Rebbe Meir. So according to Rebbe Meir, the Kohanim that were designated for preparing the next Poraduma and the Kohen Gadol who was designated for Yom Kippur services were treated with the purification of the May Poraduma. And that's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Oimer, Ein Mazin Olav Elo Shlishi Ushvi'i Bilvad. They are treated with the Poraduma ash water mixture only on the third and seventh days that they are in separation and isolation, as we've discussed already. So, in general, just let us point out parenthetically that a person who's Tomei Meis is sprinkled with these waters on the third day and the seventh day of the week that he awaits for his purification. So Rabbi Yossi says we give them we'll call the basic treatment, the third and seventh day a treatment. Rabbi Chanino, Sgan HaKoyinim Omer, Rabbi Chanino makes a distinction. He says, Koyin HaSorif Es HaPora Mazin Olav Kol Shiva. The Kohen who is separated for a week's time in anticipation of his burning the Pora Aduma, he is treated with the Mei Chatos, the water of the Pora Aduma, water ash mixture, all 7 days that he is in waiting. Kohen Gadol biyom HaKippurim ein mazin olav elo shlishi ushvi. As far as the Kohen Gadol is concerned, he gets only the basic treatment, third and seventh day. My lav b'ho kamifli. So, are we not to assume that the following is the point of machlokis? Rabbi Meir savar tuma dechuyo hibatzibor. Rabbi Meir, who says that both kohanim get a complete treatment every single day, that's because we still have to take into consideration the tuma possibility. And we don't suspend the laws of Tumah when it comes to public sacrificial activity. We should just point out the Kohen HaSorif Es HaPora, that's not a true sacrifice, but it has a, we'll say, a tzibur element to it, a communal element to it. So Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that the laws of Tumah are not suspended, so we have to consider the possibility of these Kohanim of having been Tomei, and we want to make sure that they are completely Tor. So we apply the Poraduma water every single day. Rabbi Yossi Sofar Tumo Heter Hibetzibur. Rabbi Yossi says we don't really have to apply the Poraduma water every single day because the laws of Tumas Meis are suspended when it comes to a public offering. We should point out a Rashi on the second line from the top. Rabbi Meir Sofar, Dechuyo hi betzibur, uboinon taro ma'al yisoh. Since Tumah is merely Dechuyo betzibur, it's something that we will overlook if you have no other choice. But in general, we would prefer Tahara. So Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that we require Tahara ma'al yisoh, the best form of Tahara, and Hazal bizmano, and the hazal should be done at the right time. We said that a person who was Tomei Meis, so the week after for a week since his Tumas Meis, he has to be separated from Tumas Meis in order for him to achieve Taro. And during that week, a person is sprinkled on the third day and the seventh day. So now, when is the third day since his contact with the Tumas Meis? Well, it's not very clear, because it could be that the first day of that week of isolation is really the third day since his contact with Tumas Meis. And the second day that he's in isolation, maybe that's the third day since his contact with the Tumas Meis. And the third day that he's in front of us, maybe the day he came, a moment before he was put into isolation, he had contact with Tumas Meis. So any one of the days that he's in front of us might be his third day. And then subsequent days of the week might be, in fact, his seventh day. V'chol yoimo iko l'sfuki shemo hayom yom shlishi hulutumaso. Any one of the days might be the third day since his contact with the Tumah. B'shlosha Rishonim, that's as far as the first 3 days that he is with us. B'shlosha Ha'achronim, and regarding the last 3 days, Kol Yoma V'yoma Ikol Sfuki Misfeka Shehi Shvi, Shehu Shvi, could be that the last 3 days of that week that he is in isolation, any one of those days might be his seventh day. So we want to cover all possibilities, and therefore we have this stringency, and that's all an outgrowth, according to the Gemara at this point, of saying that according to Rabbi Meir, Tuma d'chuyo hi b'tzibur, and we seek out Tara in any which way we can. Rabbi Yossi, though, he says only third and seventh day that he is in front of us, not having to really worry so much because tuma hutro ibetzibur, because essentially the rules of tumas meis were suspended. The Gemara now asks, and here we reject the suggestion made by this question, v'tispara. Explain yourself. Isova Rabbi Yossi heter hi b'tzibur. If Rabbi Yossi represents the opinion that Tumas Meis was totally suspended when it comes to public matters, public sacrifices, hazo klal loma li. What do you need any water pora aduma application for? Pora aduma mechatos, as it's called, is applied only to purify someone who had been exposed to Tumas Meis, but if the laws of Tumas Meis of defilement to the dead are totally suspended, so there's no need to seek purification whatsoever. And yet Rabbi Yossi does. Elo dekule almo hani tanoi savri tuma dechuyo hi betzibor. And as far as these tanoim are concerned, all of them say that tuma is merely dechuyo betzibor, not hutra. So that what the Gemara tried to do at the beginning of today's shiur, to say that the tanoim here parallel the previous tanoim, arguing whether tuma hutra or dechuyo betzibor, at this point we're saying no, that's not the issue amongst these tanoim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina. As far as they are concerned, they all agree that tuma is simply dechuyo hi betzibor. And here we have our second diamond in the various stages of trying to explain or set up the machlokas tanoim here. So what is their argument? Rabbi Meir sovar amrinon tvilo bizmano mitzvah. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that immersion, and we're going to make a connection between immersing in the mikveh and pora aduma hazor, that doing it at its official time, at its right time, bizmano means catching it at its right time, that is a mitzvah, that's something to strive to. So once again, we saw Rashi on the second, third line from the top pointing this out, that any given day that he is in front of us, remember we're talking about Kohanim that we isolate for a period of 7 days, the first day that he's in front of us might be the third day since he had contact with Tumas Meis. So we want to sprinkle on him that first day being the third day, possibly. And then 4 days later, on the seventh, 4 days later, he will get again a sprinkling because that might be the seventh day. Now we continue in the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi Sovar, Loi Amrino Tvilo Bizmano Mitzvah. Rabbi Yossi holds that doing the immersion at the right time, at the first correct moment, is not a mitzvah per se. The Gemara asks, and now this question lasts a number of lines, take note of that. The Sovar Rabbi Yossi, Loi Amrino Tvilo Bizmano Mitzvah? Is that really so that Rabbi Yossi doesn't put a premium on getting into the mikveh at exactly the right time, the first proper time? V'ha Tanya, we have the following Tanaic source, which describes someone that has the Shem Hashem, has the Almighty's name written on his arm. And this person needs to immerse himself in the mikveh. And in general, there's a concern here that I'm going to be erasing the name of Hashem. And that itself is something that's forbidden to do. What about someone who needs to immerse in the mikveh but happens to have the Almighty's name written on his flesh? Haresho Yashem Kosuv al Besoro. The shame is a reference to the name of the Almighty is written on his flesh, and he needs to immerse himself. V'lo yamod b'mokom hatinovas. He should not bathe. Yurchatz is to wash himself, and he should not smear himself with oil, and he shouldn't stand in a dirty place. Mokom tinovas, a dirty place, causing lack of honor or disparagement of the name of Hashem. Nizdam no loy tvilo shel mitzvah. It happened that he needed to immerse himself in a mikveh for mitzvah purposes. Korech olov gemi v'tovel. He'll seek out a gemi. Gemi is reed material, and wrap that around the Shem Hashem, around the Almighty's name that's on his flesh, and immerse himself that way. This gemi will serve to cover the name of Hashem, and the water will get in there, and he'll have an effective immersion without directly erasing the name of Hashem. However, we have to point out that the Tanna Kamma is concerned with the with protecting the honor of Hashem's name, and therefore troubles the person to seek out this gemi. Rabbi Yossi Omer Yored v'toivel kedarko. He is to descend into the mikveh and immerse himself in a regular way. Uvad shelo yishafshef. All that is required of him is that he doesn't rub the Shem Hashem. The kaimolon debetvilo bizmano mitzvah ko miflegi. The understanding is that these tanoim, the first opinion, and Rabbi Yossi are arguing concerning tevila being accomplished at its right time, at its first proper opportunity. The Tanna Kamma suffer lo amrinon tefila bezman mitzvah. The Tanna Kamma who said that we're more interested in his finding the gemi, even though that might cost him the time. He might not find the gemi immediately, and the time for the tefila, the first time for the tefila, which is called the best time, the first time, the choicest time, will pass because he's looking for the gemi. For Rabbi Yossi Sovar, Amrinon Tvila Bizmana Mitzvah. Notice Rabbi Yossi didn't want him. He said, go into the mikveh, don't preoccupy yourself with the gemi. That must be because he holds that Tvila Bizmana is a mitzvah. And in order to catch the Tvila, the immersion, at its first possible time, at its formal first possible time, which is the mitzvah, you might miss out if you're preoccupied looking for the gemi. So to set up Rabbi Yossi as holding, we don't say tevila bizmana, that wouldn't be true. Ela dekule almo lahani tanoi amrinon tevila bizmana mitzvah. So therefore, when we go back to the previous Tanoim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina, all of them will hold that doing the mikveh immersion at its first time, first possible time, its proper time, that's and not delaying, that's a mitzvah. So therefore we have to come up with a new explanation of the machloikis regarding the hazah on the two kohanim, the Pora and the Yom Kippur kohanim. How do we explain the machloikis concerning the number of hazos that are necessary? So here we go with our third explanation. Rabbi Meir Sovar, the Rabbi Meir says that we're mazin kol zayin. He says, Makshinon hazah litvila, that we are to compare hazah to immersion. Now, we said that everyone will agree that tevila bizmana mitzvah. Now, are we to say the same thing with regard to the sprinkling of the pora aduma water on the individual? So Rabbi Meir says, we compare, just like tevila bizmana mitzvah, so too the hazah bizmano is a mitzvah. So what is the zman for this person who is being, for the kohen who is being set aside for the week? Well, every day might be the zman, as we illustrated earlier. So therefore, you've got to catch it at the right time. Which is his third day since his contact with Tumas Meis? Well, we don't know. So it might be the first day he's in front of us. It might be the second day that he's in front of us. That's his third day. The third day's in front of us. It might very well be that the day he was put into isolation, a moment before he had contact with Tumas Meis, that'd be day one. Then there's day two. And the third day that he's with us is his third day since contact with Tumas Meis. So therefore, we have to, that will be the the first of the two Pora Duma applications. Rabbi Yossi, we continue in the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi, who says we do the Hazal just on the third day that he's in front of us, and the seventh day, Sofer lo makshinon Hazal, we don't compare Hazal to Tevilah. Granted, Tevilah, you've got to do it at its at the first Zman that is available, that is designated, fine. But as far as Hazal is concerned, we can wait. Even if the first day that he's in front of us happens to be the third day, and that would have been the first opportunity to do Hazal on his third day, since Katek Tumas, we don't care about that. So we'll skip it. We'll miss it. We're gonna do Tevilah. We're gonna do Hazal on the third day that he is in isolation. We do it on the third day and on the seventh day, and that is enough, because we don't have to do the Hazal at the first time that it would be appropriate to do it. The Gemara asks a question. Verbi Haninos Gan HaKoyanim. He was the third opinion in that source, in the upper half of the page. What is his opinion? E Makish Hazal Litvila. If he makes this comparison, Afilu Koyin v'Yom Kippur b'Yom Kippur Nami. Now, what was his opinion with the Koyin of Yom Kippur? So if you look back at the source, you can see the bays that was dashed underlined Koyin Golo b'Yom Kippur. He says only third and seventh day. So if he compares Hazal to Tevilah, so the Koyin Golo, in anticipation of Yom Kippur, should have Hazal every single day. E lo makish Hazal l'Tevilah. If Rabbi Hanina does not compare Hazal to Tevilah, well, then afilu kohen asur ifa sapora nami lo. Then even the kohen who is designated for preparing the pora aduma should not require a daily hazah, and yet he says he does. Li oilam loy makish. Basically, Rabbi Hanino does not make the comparison. And then the question is, so why the kohen asur ifa sapora needs hazah every single day, but kohen asur ifa sapora male ba'almo. Mala v'alma is a term we've seen in the past. It's a reference to a simple added stringency, but it's not part of the basic halacha. It's an added stringency. And if you'll ask, well, why are we adding a stringency to the kohen asur ifa sapora? So we've discussed that in the past as well. That having to do with the fact that we are mitamehim, making him a tevul yom at the time that he is. And he goes to mikveh, and even before sundown he goes ahead to prepare the pora aduma. We discussed this at length in a previous shiur, so we're not going to go over that now. The Gemara continues. Keman az laha detonu rabbanon. We have a Tanaic source. It doesn't have a name. It continues to the third line from the top of Amud Beis, and our question is, according to which one of the Tanoim that we've seen so far will this source seem to conform? Ein bein koyin asur ifa sapora l'koyin gadol b'yom ha-kippurim. There is no difference between these two koyhanim, elo, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis, sheze prishosu l'kedusha, v'echov ha-koyanim nogin bo, v'ze prishosu l'taro, v'ein echov ha-koyanim nogin boi. So what's the difference in terms of preparing them? What's the difference? The kohen that is there for Yom Kippur, that's the first ones we said on the top line, Prishasu L'Kedusha. His separation is in anticipation of his, we'll say, his rise in holiness, insofar as that he is preparing himself to go into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that, and that's the purpose for his separation. It's not a separation that's grounded in establishing supreme purification. Therefore, we can allow his fellow Kohanim to touch him. However, the Kohen who's Asur ifa sapora, his Prisha, his separation is for during his separation, or in preparing him to Pora Aduma, we want to achieve maximum to we want to be stringent in a maximum way regarding all forms of tumah, and therefore his colleague kohanim are not allowed to even touch him. We look at Rashi at the top. Shezeh prishasu l'kedusha Likones l'machne shechina. That's a reference to the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur. He's preparing to enter the machne shechina. In this case, is a reference to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'loy he'libo zocha olav, and he shouldn't have a feeling of haughtiness. V'yehe nivdal mikol kalis rosh. We want him to be separate from all forms of levity. Shechol olav emo b'havdalosim nebrios. And this is achieved by we want shecholah that should set upon him Amos fear, and that's achieved through his being separated from the rest of the community. So he is basically separated, even though there is he's in the presence of other kohanim, but nevertheless a very limited group of people are near him. The next Rashi v'zeh prishasu l'taro l'hachmir b'tarosoi to apply a stringency in the realm of purification. Now, why are we striving for this area of stringency? As we explained before and on an earlier occasion, we are actually metamehim on the day that he's going to do the prepper. He's going to burn the poraduma. We are metamehim and then put him into mikveh. We immerse him so as to dispel the approach of the tzedukim, the scoffers, those who did not believe in Torah Shabbal Peh, who said that only a kohen who is completely Torah is allowed to do it. So since we practice this leniency of being metamehim to make our point, and therefore we apply this additional stringency, preventing all other people from even touching him. So now, this source points out, what's the difference? Well, we said the only difference is that one's prisha is for kedusha and the other's prisha is for tara, and the practical difference is one we allow the other kohanim to touch him, and the other, in the case of pora, we don't allow other kohanim to touch him. Come on, so who would say that? Answer: O Rabbi Meir, O Rabbi Yossi. It's either one of those two tanoim. Di Rabbi Chaninos Gana Kayanim. If this source were in accordance with him, ha ika nami ha. There is another difference, namely the amount of the number of times that they will be sprinkled with the mei pora aduma. He mentioned that the kayin of soifas of pora is applied every single day. The Kohen Gadol who's waiting for Yom Kippur, he gets only the third and seventh days. So that was not mentioned in this source. Therefore, it's not in accordance with Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim, who did make that distinction. We have a question now. This question lasts a number of lines. Before we go through this, let's just glance at the side. We have a Nosei, a topic heading. Hezber ha'higayon shemachrei ha'der shemazin olav kol shiva. We're going to be looking into the logic behind the approach that says there should be sprinkling every single day. We have a chart that accompanies this Gemara that you'll find at the bottom of the page. There are a lot of numbers. It might appear a bit complicated, but we will try to. The truth is we've already mentioned the points of this chart orally before even noticing the chart on Omid Aleph. So it shouldn't be very difficult. It's basically a review of what we've already said, but in chart form. So that having been said, we have a question. As we said, it lasts a number of lines. Maskif lo Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yossi asks, Bishlamo, I understand the need for six of the 7 days of Tevilah. Once again, we're asking, why would someone say you need 7 days of not Tevilah, we really mean Hazah. We mentioned before that Hazah, the sprinkling of the Pora Duma, it's an ash-water mixture on someone who had been defiled as a result of his contact with the dead. He is sprinkled upon the third day and the seventh day of his contact with that defilement. We're talking about, let's say, the kohanim that we've set aside, have isolated, like the kohen HaSoref Sapora. we saw the need to sprinkle on him every single day. What's the point of every single day? So most of the days, 6 of the 7 days that he's in our presence in isolation, we can explain why there is a sprinkling. And we now continue in the Gemara. The lettering that you see in the Gemara will correspond to lettering that you see on the chart at the bottom of the page. So the Gemara says, Bishlamo Rishon, the Aleph case that you see on the chart, Bishlamo Rishon, the first day that he is in our presence. Remember, we're talking about someone that we're isolating for a period of 7 days. So the first day that he is in isolation, Shemo Shlishi, that might be the third day since his contact with Tumas Mace. And on the chart you can see how there's a thick line. On the upper part of the chart you see Prisho Lelishkas Parhedrin LeKohen Gadol of Yom Kippur. If we're going to talk about the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur, so that would be his being placed in the chamber, the Parhedrin chamber. Or on the bottom of this chart you can see Prisho Lepora. Whatever the case is, that thick line represents the point in time that we're separating him. So if you look at the Aleph of the chart, you can see that there's day 1 and day 2. Those days are days before he came into our presence. Day 3 that's listed on the chart is also is the first day that he's in our presence. So that the days accounting for his being in our presence are the bottom line running across. So the day 1 that he is in front of us is maybe the third day since his contact with the Tumah. So being that it's the third day, that's the time to do the first of the 2 sprinklings. We continue in the Gemara, Sheni Shemo Shlishi. So if you go to the line with the bays at the right hand side, notice the second day that he's in front of us might be his third day since his contact with the Tumah, the first of those days having been the day before his isolation. That's the Bay's case. Now, Shlishi, the Gimel case, Shlishi, Shemo Shlishi. If you look at the line with the Gimel, so the first day of his isolation might be just before he was put into isolation, he had contact with Tumas Mace. So his third day is his third day in isolation. That's why we've circled the 3s, representing his third day of since his contact with the Tumas Mace. The third day is the time for doing the first Pora Aduma application. So we explained the sprinklings on day 1, day 2, and day 3 of his isolation. Let's continue in the Gemara. Chamishi, the fifth day of his isolation, that is you'll notice around on the left hand side of the chart, there are again letters that are encircled. You could see the Dalid line. On that Dalid line, we see that on the fifth day of his isolation, remember the numbers running across the bottom of this chart are the days of his being in front of us in isolation. So the fifth day that he's in front of us might be the seventh day since his contact with the Tumas Mace. Seventh day warrants a sprinkling. So you can see that is illustrated on the chart, that the fifth day that he's in front of us is in fact day 7 since his contact with the Tumah. The next case, the Hay case, Shishi Shemoshvi. So you go to your Hay line on that chart and you notice the sixth day that he is in front of us might be his seventh day since the Tumas Mace. And similarly, the next case, the Vov case, Shvi'i Shemo Shvi'i, the seventh day that he's in front of us might be his seventh day since his contact with the Tumas Mace. So we just finished, and you can see how clearly it appears on the chart, the 7s that are encircled. Any one of those days, the fifth day that he is in front of us, he's in isolation, or the sixth day or the seventh day, might all be day 7s. the question here is, Elo Revi'i Loma Li Hazal Klal, the fourth day of his isolation, why should he have any sprinkling? Lo Bishlishi Ikot Lisfuki, Velo Bishvi'i Ikot Lisfuki. It's not falling under the doubt of maybe it being the third day. That's clearly not the case, and it's not the seventh day either. Now, Rashi explains why it's not the third day. Now, in order, what we did on this chart, the top line, you can see the line marked with the Zion. Regarding the fourth day of isolation, it can't be his third day, because when he is together with us in isolation, when he's been separated, so from day one he has had no contact with Tumas Meis. So day four of isolation cannot be the third day since his contact with Tuma. What about the fourth day of isolation being his seventh day? If that's the case, in order for a seventh day application of Paraduma water to be effective, there had to be a third day application that preceded it. But in this case, the third day, he wasn't with us yet. So there was no third day application. Therefore, this fourth day of isolation, as the Gemara says, it doesn't lend itself to being considered a day three, nor does it lend itself to being considered a day seven. The Gemara continues. And this is a response. What does it say? Ulitameich, according to you, namely Rabbi Yossi Reb Chanina, who's asking this question, Hazal kol shiva mi'ika, is there ever such a thing as a literal seven-day hazaah situation? The Hakaimalon, we have a rule, the hazaah shvus, that hazaah is prevented, we prohibit the hazaah of Mei Paraduma on Shabbos, because it's a shvus, the hazaah shvus, v'eino doiches a Shabbos. This is something that is featured prominently in Maseches Psochim, where the Gemara emphasizes that it's actually the Tanoim mention this, that there is a hazaah, a rabbinic restriction against doing hazaah on Shabbos. So hazaah is never done on Shabbos, and over a period of seven consecutive days, you're going to run into a Shabbos. Elo, my islach lememar. So what are you going to have to say when we speak about 7 days of hazaah? Shiva means labar mishabbos. It's, in other words, it's not a literal 7 days. It's a week minus Shabbos. Hocha nami shiva labar mirivi. Here too, when we speak about doing the hazaah of 7 days, it doesn't mean literally every single one of those 7 days. It means that over the course of 7 days, he'll have sprinklings, with the exception of the fourth day of isolation. Omar Rava. Now Rava makes a point. This lasts a number of lines. We've used a long point marking. With all of this in mind, we're gonna state the following conclusion. Hilkoch, Kohen Gadol biyom haKippurim. When it comes to the Kohen Gadol who was set aside for a week prior to Yom Kippur, Delo b'didon talio milsa. The date that we choose for his isolation is not something that's dependent on us. Ela b'kviyot diarcha talio milsa. Kviyot diarcha, for our purposes, means the establishment of the calendar. It's dependent on what day is established to be the third of Tishrei, the night, namely the week before Yom Kippur. So b'tlosa b'tishri boi lefrushi, he needs to be separated, isolated, and relocated into the Lishkas Barhedrin, that chamber in the Beis HaMikdash, on the third of Tishrei. V'chol emas demisrami tlosa b'tishri mafrushin aleim. Whenever the third of Tishrei comes about, we put him into that chamber, and as we said, he'll get sprinklings every day except for Shabbos and the fourth day. So it could be that of the 7 days, he's only going to be sprinkled upon 5 of those 7 days. Avol, Kohen HaSorif HaSapora, the B'didon Tal Yomilsa, the Kohen was being set aside for the preparation of the Porah Aduma. That's not something that depends on the calendar. It depends on us. When we decide when we see, let's say, the water, the supply of Porah Aduma water is running low, so we say it's running low. You know what? It's time to set this, prepare another source of red heifer ash. So we determine on our own what day to do that. So what day will we choose? So we're going to choose a day. We're going to choose a day whereby the fourth day of his isolation will coincide with Shabbos. That way, you reduce the number of non-sprinkling days. We're striving to do maximum number of sprinklings. That's certainly the spirit of this Gemara. We want to get as close to 7 days of sprinkling. Now, Shabbos, you're not going to be able to sprinkle. We also know that the fourth day of isolation, there's no need for sprinkling. So what should we do? We should set up a situation where the fourth day of his isolation falls out on a Shabbos. How do we do that? So look what the Gemara says. Let's read that line again. His date for isolation is dependent on us. We will put him into isolation on a Wednesday. That will be day one of his isolation. So that his fourth day of isolation comes out on a Shabbos. So Wednesday is day one, Thursday day two, Friday, day 3, Shabbos, day 4. Shabbos, we said, there's not going to be any sprinkling to begin with, because Hazor Shavuos, and we pointed out that the fourth day doesn't require sprinkling to begin with. So that in that scenario, you will have 6 of the 7 days that he's in isolation, having him being sprinkled. We continue in the Gemara with the quote from the Mishnah. We mentioned that the Kohen Gadol before Yom Kippur is relocated to the Lishkas Parhedron. The Lishkas Parhedron, v'chulei, Tanya. We on the side, we should point out, we have a topic heading where we've written Reka L'shem Lishkas Parhedron. This is the background for the name Lishkas Parhedron that's assigned to that particular chamber. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, v'chi Lishkas Parhedron hoysa. Is the real name the Lishkas Parhedron? Now, Parhedron, Rashi points out, Pekidei HaMelech. These are workers, appointed workers, officials that work for the king. Later in this discussion, we're going to find out that workers were switched. We'll call it the royal staff was switched every year. That's just a point to bear in mind. We'll come back to that later. So Rav Yehuda says, was that chamber called Lishkas Parhedron? Palo Lishkas Balvoti Hoysa. Its real name was Lishkas Balvoti. Rashi points out that the word Balvoti means ministers, something of probably of greater significance, of greater importance. It was called the minister's chamber. Ela, Bitchila Hoyu Korinoso Lishkas Balvoti. B'tchi means at the beginning. The beginning here is a reference to the years when Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol. We'll see more about Shimon HaTzadik and other Kehanim Gedolim that officiated in the second Beis HaMikdash. Shimon HaTzadik served for many years in that capacity. So during his leadership, what else should we term that? His Kohen Gadol stewardship during that period of time, it was called Lishkas Balvoti. However, when he passed away, things changed. Umitoch shenoisim alav momon l'kahuna. After that, people paid the national government for the right to be a Kohen Gadol. Umachlifen oisakol shneim osur chodesh. Those Kohanim didn't last very long. They were wicked. And the Gemara will see later on, Rashi points it out already, they didn't even last the year. So in effect, every year, those wicked Kohanim Gedolim who bought the office, they didn't live out through the year. A replacement, and therefore replacement Kohanim were needed. And each new kohen who moved into that office would make let's say, structural improvements or decorations in that office, in that chamber, each one trying to outdo his predecessor, trying to make it look nicer. That's what this source goes on to say. After having bought their way into that lofty position of Kohen Gadol, and they're redecorating that chamber, the result was that would end up happening every year. So keparhedrin halolu shemachlifin oisam kol shnei moser chodesh. This idea of an annual changeover is like the way the king treated his staff. Every year he would change his staff to a new group. Lefikach hayu korin osa lishkas parhedrin. As a result of that similarity, namely the yearly change, so the chamber became known as the chamber of the parhedrin. Also, a group. They are, as we said, a group. The king's staff changed every year. You can see in the Gemara we have a bracketed section, and this bracket section lasts quite a few lines down the top of Tes Amud Aleph on the side of the Gemara where the starred note appears. Achrei Hasugrayim, HaGemara Chozeres LeInyan HaKuna Gedola B'Bayis Rishon U'Bayis Sheni. After the bracketed section, the Gemara will go back to discussing the office of Kohen Gadol in the time of the first temple and the period of the second temple. Within the bracket section, the term parhedrin will be mentioned in another context. So with the brackets, you can see that we've isolated this section to make things easier, and to be aware that afterwards we're going to get back to the issue of the Kohanim Gedolim. So that being said, let us continue in the Gemara. Tanan Hosam. Hanachtoimim, nachtoimim are bakers, and they, in this case, were referring to bakers that bought their flour from people who are known as amaratzim. Amaratzim, amhoratz is someone who is suspect, rabbinically suspect, of not tithing properly. There are certain tithes that they can be trusted to having removed, having separated, but other types of tithe, not so. This brings us into a realm known as demai, which is a suffix, a doubt whether tithing was done properly. It can be pointed out that on a Torah level, the majority of Amaratzim were those who did tithe. So this source says as follows: Tanach Tomim lo chayvu oison chachomim lahafrish ela trumas meiser v'chala. The rabbis imposed a stringency on the nachtomim who bought from amaratzim that they are expected to tithe only the trumas meiser tithe and chala. Trumas meiser is a tenth of what a levi would ordinarily receive. A levi received the trumas rishon tithe that was done every year of the 7-year sabbatical cycle. If 6 of the 7 years, of course, Shemitah year, the 7th year notwithstanding. From the Trumas Meiser, from the Meiser Rishon that a Levi received, a tenth of that was to be given to a Kohen. Now that tithe is known as Trumas Meiser. So the Nachtom who bought from an Amoritz was expected to tithe that Trumas Meiser tithe, and Chala. Chala is a minimal amount, a negligible amount of dough that's separated and given to the Kohen. When you're dealing with a baker, generally speaking, you'll see the figure 1/48 of the batter is given to a Kohen. So those are the tithes that the Nachtomim were expected to tithe. All the other tithes, and we will be highlighting them as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice a double underline used to highlight the other tithes, and we're going to be asking here, well, why? What about the other tithes? So the Gemara goes on and says, "Bishlamo truma gedola lo." I understand truma gedola, the basic truma tithe given to Kohanim is not demanded of the Nachtomim who bought from the Amhoratzim. Desanya, the source says at the top of that Tes Amid Aleph, Lefisha Shalach B'chol Gvulei Yisrael. This is a quote, it's a fragmented quote from a source that is quoted in Maseches Soita, where the Gemara there tells us that Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Yochanan the high priest, he is the one that instituted the stringency of we'll call it tithing or possibly re-tithing from that which you buy from an Amah or Etz. So he did a study and found, as this source says, Lefisha Sholach. Sholach means he sent out emissaries to check out the national situation. That again, that's Yochanan Kohen Gadol did this, and the Chol Gvulei Yisrael within all of the boundaries of the land of Israel, the Rosh She'ein Mafrishin Al Truma Gadol Mavad, he discovered that the public, everybody, including the Amoratzim, they were diligent in tithing only the Truma Gadola. When it came to Truma Gadola, everyone tithed that. Maaser Rishon and Maaser Oni, these kind of tithes, the tithe, Maaser Rishon is a tithe given to a Kohen, to a Levi, and Maaser Oni is a tithe given during the third and sixth years of the sabbatical cycle, one-tenth of one's produce is given to the poor. So, Nami, lo, I understand that as well, the Nachtomim were not expected to tithe that from the stuff, from the produce they brought from the Amoratzim. Hamotzi Mechavero Olov Haraya. These tithes, Maaser Rishon and Maaser Oni, are in the realm of financial concern only. In other words, someone who wrongfully eats Maaser Rishon or wrongfully eats Maaser Oni is not guilty of having eaten something that we would classify as unkosher. He is guilty of taking something that's not his. That's a financial concern. It's not in the realm of what we call Iser V'Heter. Exactly how to translate Iser V'Heter, other than the literal translation, the that which is prohibited versus that which is allowed, maybe we'll put that in the realm of the spiritual or the ritual realm of Judaism. So Maaser Rishon and Maaser Oni are in the financial realm only. Therefore, there's a rule that when there's an element of doubt, we say, Hamotzi Mechaveru, he who wants to extract from someone else, Allah writes upon him, the burden of proof is upon him to prove that the tithe was not separated. So in our case, someone bought, Nachtom, the baker, bought from the Amoratzim, a poor man or a Levi would have to come along and say, hey, you know, the produce you bought from that guy, the Amoretz, he never tithed it, so go prove it. First prove it, and then I'll give it to you. So the Nachtom, until such proof is made, he doesn't have to release Maaser Rishon or Maaser Oni. Ella, Maaser Sheni, what about this tithe? Maaser Sheni is a tenth of one's produce that he has to tithe during the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the sabbatical cycle. Take the produce and eat it in Yerushalayim. That is not a financial realm. That's in the realm of Iser V'Heter. And being that that's the case, we don't have a concept of Mamotzi Mechavo V'Araya. Nifushu V'Nisko V'Nichlinu B'Yerushalayim. Let the Nachtom be required to Nifushu separate it. Nisku, take it up, means rise with it to Jerusalem and eat it in Jerusalem. After all, he's going to benefit from it. It'll be his food. So why not insist upon the Nachtom who bought from the Amoratzim to separate the Maaser Sheni tithe and bring it to Yerushalayim? The Gemara answers, Omar Ula, Mitoch Sheparhedrin Halalu Choivtin Oison Kol Shneimosor Chodesh. Notice that we dash on the Parhedrin. This is the reason that this discussion is featured here in our Gemara. The Parhedrin were the king's officials, the king's, the royal staff. They acted as a type of an enforcement force, and they would hoped and they would beat the bakers, forcing them to lower their prices. They hoped on kol yud beis chodesh in every 12 months they would land the hand of force on these bakers, the Omrim Lahan, and tell them, Michru Bezol, sell cheaply, and as a result of that, their profit margin was was very marginal. In fact, it's quite doubtful whether they profited whatsoever. So lo ashruchinhu rabbonon, the rabbonon did not trouble them to lose, so to speak, another 10% of their goods in order to fulfill the doubtful necessity of doing maaser sheni. So the rabbonon simply pattered them, exempted them. Don't forget, we mentioned at the beginning of this section that from the Torah standpoint, Rov Amaratzim, the majority, did tithe. So that this is not a type of leniency against something in the Torah. That would be something we couldn't allow. But it's a leniency on a rabbinic stringency. Therefore, it can be done. So the rabbis didn't trouble them to tithe the Maaser Sheni so as to enable them to realize a more significant profit in light of the fact that they were pressured by these Parhedrin forces to reduce their prices. My Parhedrin, what does the word Parhedrin mean? Pursi. Pursi means those appointed by the king, appointed individuals. At this point, before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.